So today I'd like to talk about the domain wall motion induced by current, and I don't want to go into very detail, but I want to briefly explain the physics and also explain the situation which is still controversial both in experiment and theory side. Especially we have a different opinion about the domain wall dynamics compared with the second talker by Professor Stuart Band. So we'll try to explain our theory and let you compare the difference. Okay, so I'm basically working with Professor Kono, who is at Osaka University, and Dr. Shibata, who is a postdoc, and some French people, and Nakatani, who is doing numerical simulations, and Professor Fukuyama. Okay. So the physics is very simple in this phenomenon. What we have to see is, that the electron transport in the presence of domain wall. And the domain wall is a structure like this, which is a local spin, and the local direction is spatially modulated. And when the electron enters in this domain wall, some of the electron is scattered, and some goes through the wall. But since the domain wall has a spin, the electron spin can be rotated. So the domain wall has two roles of charge scatterer and also spin rotator. And this scattering and spin rotation, they result in different driving mechanisms of the wall. The first one is rather trivial. This comes from simply the reflection. If we can switch off the light. Can you see the... It's better. Okay. Yeah, the reflection of the electron simply pushes the wall because of the momentum transfer effect. Like you... I'm not sure how to... Okay, so this is a simple... The reflection of the electron pushes the wall because the electron momentum to the wall. So this is called the momentum transfer effect. And also the spin rotation when the electron goes through the wall also pushes the wall because of the exchange of the angular momentum. You will see that as the electron passes through the wall, its spin is rotated or flipped. So the angular momentum of the electron is changed. And this angular momentum should be transferred to the wall, and as a result, the wall starts to move. The first one is exchange of linear momentum, and the second one is the exchange of spin angular momentum, and they both push the wall in the same direction. So our aim is to formulate these two processes. Okay. The system we consider is a kind of nanowire where we put just one domain wall right here. And we also apply a current. So the system, the Lagrangian of the system we consider is simply this one. Theta and phi are the angle of the local spin, so it which forms the domain wall. And this is a kind, sometimes called a spin very phase term, which describes the wall spin dynamics. And the spin Hamiltonian here is quite general. It consists of the ferromagnetic coupling and also easy axis anisotropy, which is which simulates the how do you call it, the spin favoring to lie in the wire direction. And also we have for generality a transverse hard axis anisotropy, which describes the spins don't want to point out of the plane because of the high demagnetization field. Okay. And I'll show that this term gives a wall structure. So if this easy axis anisotropy energy is strong, the wall is quite rigid. So we can treat wall as a just stable object. And the out of plane energy describes the dynamics. I mean, it doesn't affect the shape of the wall, but it governs the wall dynamics, as I will see. And the electron part is simply a free electron. And the most important, it's too low. You can see. The interaction between the local spin and the conduction electron is a general exchange interaction. So the electron spins, local spin, they try to precess around each other. So that's all we have here in our model.
Can you explain yourself this? How many spins are there per unit cross section? So are you treating the what you call the spin Hamiltonian for the ferromagnet? Are you treating them quantum mechanically or are you treating them?
The spins are just classical object now because of the large cross section. And of course for the present experimental situation we can treat spins as classical. But for theorists it should be interesting.
Just that you use the word spin Hamiltonian, so I think it depends on the quantum mechanics.
Oh.
You say magnetization.
Okay, I can say magnetization. Quantum case is something very interesting. Anyway, so we treat the spins as classical, and also we treat the wall as quite stable object here for simplicity. This is justified when the easy axis anisotropy is very strong, which means the sample shape is rather like really quite like a wire. And also, okay. And also, we assume that although the cross section is not small, it's large enough to ensure that. The cross section is quite large, so the spins are classical, but also it should not be too large because we want to treat the wall as one-dimensional planar wall. Otherwise, if the system is like plane, the wall is something more, it's not like planar or one-dimensional, it's more complicated. So we just think of wire-like structure with the length, width is less than the domain wall thickness, lambda. So we treat the wall as one-dimensional point-like structure. And to describe the wall, we need this position x. But we'll see that we need to take account of another degree of freedom, which we call phi, that is out of plane of the magnetization. And this is because this x and phi are canonically conjugate to each other. So as a theory, we have to incorporate both on the same footing. And we can derive from the spin Lagrangian effective Lagrangian for the domain wall simply by use of this x and phi. And this looks quite simple. The domain wall Lagrangian is made of x dot phi, and also the potential out of plane potential for the phi degrees of freedom. So that's a free domain wall Lagrangian. if the wall is prana and yeah, if it's the prana, it's prana. And of course, the number here is the total number of the electrons in the wall. So if we assume this is quite large enough, so everything is classical now. Okay, so we see really that phi and x are canonical conjugates. So that means that when we push the wall, when the wall moves, this angle phi must tilt, we can say that phi is a momentum of the domain wall. So the wall dynamics is not in general simple as just translational motion, but it's more like the phi starts to tilt, and also that drives the wall motion. So the dynamics is rather complicated. Okay, so our formulation is that was a free domain wall, but we have to apply a current, and we can first derive the equation motion of the domain wall under the current. So this is simply the equation motion is simply derived by taking derivative with respect to x and phi, and the point here is we have to calculate the electron path, which gives these two terms. And this is electron spin. So our task is to calculate this electron spin in the presence of the domain wall, and estimate these terms, and then we can obtain full equation motion for the wall. And this electron spin is described by a Keldysh-Green function interacting with a domain wall, which we treat as a gauge field. I will not discuss in detail, but okay. And we use Keldysh-Green function because we want to calculate the effect of the current. So the information of the current is included in the Green function here. And so this is the wall velocity, and anyway, we have to calculate the spin density, and this is a kind of torque from the current, spin current, and this is we'll see that this describes a reflection force from the wall, and both are described by simple bubble with different vertices. And okay, so anyway, these two terms describe the first one describes the reflection of the electron, and the second one describes the transfer of the spin angular momentum to the wall. And if we estimate, if we calculate these diagrams, we will see that the first one simply is written in terms of charge current and the domain wall resistivity, which is really a reflection probability of the wall. And the second one is reduces, if the wall is thick enough, reduces to simple spin current or the spin polarization of the current. So this describes really the transfer of the spin angular momentum to the wall. So now we have full equation motion for the domain wall under the current, taking account these two processes.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
You didn't say much about what's assumed for the electron Hamiltonian.
Mm.
What is taken?
Yeah, okay, so the electron is free, but what we assume is adiabatic. That means that the wall structure is, slowly varying. So we can treat, we carry out a gauge transformation in the electron. So, and perturbatively the inhomogeneity of the spin texture.
For instance, spin orbit coupling?
It's not included in our model so far, but we'll discuss later what happens if we include the spin orbit in the
elastic scattering?
So far, no, but elastic scattering doesn't change a lot. as far as we know. But spin flip is very important and modifies the equation motion quite largely. Okay. So anyway, without the spin flip interaction, the equation motion of the wall is okay, rather simple. Of course, it's not very simple, but just two set of equation motion. And but this turns out to describe fairly well the, if we compare with the numerical simulation, this equation looks quite successful, because that's because the wall structure is quite, in reality, quite rigid. We can treat the wall as a kind of rigid structure moving, and the degree of freedom important is just x and phi. If we this, because the other modes, the other deformation modes are quite high energy in the case of domain wall. Okay. So now we show some typical example of the equation, the result of the equation motion. This is the same equation motion, and okay, the important equation is here. This describes the spin current giving the spin angular momentum to the wall. So the spin current induces domain wall velocity, but this term is very important in our description, because this describes that when the current is applied, this the wall starts to move, but also this phi angle starts to grow. So what happens is, as we saw here, when we apply a current, the structure moves, but it tilts. And if the current is not large, these two terms balances, so the wall has don't have to move. I mean, this can be remain zero, and the situation is equilibrium balanced. So the wall doesn't move anymore if the current is small. So what we expect is there is a kind of intrinsic threshold in our theory, which is determined by the transverse anisotropy energy, because the threshold is determined by the balance of these two terms. And if we only if we apply a current larger than this threshold, the wall starts to move. What happens is, okay, in this regime, the current is so strong that the phi continues to rotate and the wall continues to move, and so the wall motion equilibrium. Steady motion of the wall appears here, and this there is an intrinsic threshold, because we don't take account any extrinsic pinning, but the wall cannot move at small current. This is an important consequence of the equation motion in the absence of any force. Okay, and so for the device application, to lower this threshold is very important. And in principle, we can control the threshold by changing the sample shape, because sample shape affects this out-of-plane energy. So I will go back to this point later. Okay. And let me compare with most recent experiment made down on the magnetic semiconductors in this Ono, Professor Ono's group. They made that gallium manganese austenite, which where they trap the domain wall in the structure like this. The structure is quite big, but anyway, they trap the wall and put the current, and they observed how the wall propagates as a current under the current, and they obtained the velocity as a function of current, applied current density, and the result was this. And the most important thing is that this experiment succeeded in operating the wall at quite a low current. The density is okay, like 6 times 10 to the 5 ampere centimeter squared, which is really quite high, but maybe 3 orders of magnitude lower than other experiments. And the velocity obtained, that was order of 10 or some meters per second, which is also quite big compared with other experiment. And okay, so what we have to see is, I mean, the experiment indicates that there is a strong temperature dependence. 100 Kelvin and 107 Kelvin has a quite different behavior. But if we forget about thermal effect, what we have to see here is the magnitude of the current. Or okay, there seems to be a threshold here, around here. So the what concerns to is the value of the threshold and also the velocity. And we can compare with our simple theory by, I mean, if we know these two numbers, we can compare with the theory. And as far as they compared, the experimenters compared, the fit was quite good. I mean, this number is consistent with the threshold determined the intrinsic one, which is given by the shape anisotropy. And the velocity was also consistent with the spin and angular momentum transfer. So their conclusion is that the intrinsic pinning mechanism describes well the experiment. Okay, if we forget about thermal effect.
Yeah? Why did they measure this with only small temperature window?
That's because at lower temperature they couldn't move the wall, and at higher temperature maybe the TC is close to this temperature, so the ferromagnetism, so they could observe just very narrow.
So you say it's small current, but because the resistance is very high, if it goes higher current, that would evaporate.
At lower temperature, we need more current, and then everything is.
But what do you think you can use zero temperature theory for that?
Okay, basic feature could be explained, and also we took account the thermal effect. I can explain briefly later.
Roughly around 6. You're asserting that the experiment has shown a change in behavior.
That
seems pretty.
Okay, it's not as clear as, I mean, the theory predicts us rather steep, but the experiment is more continuous.
I wouldn't say more continuous, I would say.
Okay, that's true. So, I also agree with you totally, but it seems to be there is a kind of threshold somewhere, because, the rise is, the point is whether this is like this or linear or others, and no one can answer that question, but so far we can interpret their message is that because of this value is more or less consistent with intrinsic pinning, we could interpret the total global behavior as something like this, smeared out by thermal activation. That's one possibility, and that's the simplest explanation, of course. And I'm not sure, but Professor Barnes predicts linear behavior, right? And then that also could explain, but in that case, I think the value of the threshold don't have to be this value, right? So experimentally, this threshold is quite close to this intrinsic one. So that's why they believe that. the behaviors looks like this. Did I answer to your question? Yeah, thermal activation continues to lower temperature as far as I remember.
So then it means that for this lower current bias, you need to use effective different theory than
yours. Yes, some taking account the thermal activation.
So you need to introduce some pinning potentials as well.
Right, right. Yeah, especially this, if we believe in the explanation, the at their temperature, the behavior should look like this, and all these are thermal effects. And in that case, we have to introduce some extrinsic pinning to describe this small tail. Or this tail depends strongly on the.
But there is intrinsic pinning in your theory, so there would be thermal activation in your theory that doesn't get confirmed.
You
have a washboard essentially. Extrinsic pinning in your theory. I mean, that's
you
worked out.
In our thermal activation, we treat extrinsic pinning also. And so you
don't need extrinsic pinning to get thermal activation within your theory.
No, actually it's more detailed, but we need because. Only when the extrinsic pinning appears, we have a kind of particle overcoming the wall, the energy barrier picture. So otherwise, I mean, but yeah, we need extrinsic pinning in our theory also. But this is maybe too detailed.
What was
landed? No, sorry, the thickness of the wall, which is 100 nanometer. So this is the experimental paper from the experimental paper and okay, the I think
two
yeah.
Yeah.
This one.
There's a blue line,
there's
a dotted line. What are they?
Just a moment.
Blue one.
Yeah, blue one.
Another horizontal
right.
One says
speed
is zero, the red one says
speed.
Do you remember?
Go back to your previous view graph because that looks like they changed the axis on that one.
Sorry, I forgot, but as far as I remember, this is a fit by use of this curve, this kind of curve, and this is linear curve fit indicates this. And I don't know what is this.
That should be a. That was a 1 before.
Hmm?
Oh, your A is blanked out the 1 of the 1.
No.
If you look at your axes, it's 0.5, 1, 1.5. It's not 0.
Oh,
it's the A that's blanked out the 1.
Ah! Sorry! Ah! Sorry, yeah, okay, so just. Yeah, so this A is a measure of the how what is the efficiency of the angular momentum transfer to the wall. And they say that, okay, this is 1, and the theory predicts something like 2. So it's more or less in agreement with within the factor of 2, yes.
Can I just get your favorite curve on that plot would be 100 Kelvin curve.
100 Kelvin curve.
Seems to show something like
this one?
Your favorite curve might be the 107 Kelvin one, which is more
linear.
So is that part of the
perspective? I mean, I like all of them. I mean, the bend over in the one is because you're actually beginning to go into the creep regime.
Mm.
So that when they come down straight and then bend over a little bit like a charge density wave does, because you start going into the creep regime. Or the 100 is the one that shows the most creep.
And I am, yeah.
If you start fitting on a log plot for lower temperatures, then you start getting straight lines on a log linear plot.
And I agree with, yeah. The experiment in the experiment.
Yeah, and A is
I forgot, more or less temperature independent, I guess, right?
I'm talking about the more lower than the
smart. Ah. It looks like it's going down, but
what they're doing is they're fitting the square root curve and extracting A from the fitting square root curve. So they're saying that the efficiency of the spin transfer is changing with temperature if you fit it to the Tartar-Kolmogorov theory. Whereas the top black curve is, if you say it's linear, which simply says that A is wrong by a factor of 2, where the parameters are not so well known, apart from that one point at around 100 degrees, which you can question what's happening there.
Anyway, I think the data is so narrow that we cannot say anything about. Of course, under, yeah. Yeah, close. Yeah.
I will tell you that in his answer now, there's an example where the spin flip scattering is very strong. I think you will talk about this later. But is it at this point then proper to compare a theory without spin orbital spin flip scattering?
This we don't know the answer. We also agree with you that, but anyway, the experimental data seem to be quite consistent with simple theory without spin flip. This is rather surprising, but
I think it's pure coincidence.
The coincidence.
You're talking about spin flip stepping off what? Walk off what?
No, I mean there are so many things. There is spin flip scattering,
spin orbit scattering. Of what? Of what? I mean, spin orbit is one thing, but you're saying spin flip, so you're saying the conduction electrons against the manganese?
That would be the conduction electrons, yes. The holes, the conduction electron holes.
Against what? The manganese?
I think there are experimental data which give you this sort of spin flip or spin relaxation rates, which I think are very,
flip,
very high.
Flips mean something like this, right? Or are you just talking about spin orbit flipping up and down?
I just say there are sort of scatterings which take care of it, that the spin is not in the quantum number.
But that's relaxation.
Relaxation, okay, that's
in its alpha parameter.
This would sort of, whether this comes back on the alpha parameter or not, is a different question. But it should be there, right? And it's not in the theory.
Right.
The alpha parameter is in the theory. Yeah, it is. Oh, well, okay, because he has intrinsic pinning, so that doesn't need alpha. No. Yeah, it does. It needs alpha to get to the thing, but otherwise the dynamics are different.
No, I agree with you that the eigenstate is some spin and orbital is mixed. So the spin angular momentum transfer should not go like this. This is your... Yes, I agree with this.
This compared to the impurity scattering, I think lots of things can happen. I think it's not a very well understood material, I think. And on top of that, it's very close to the critical temperature where you should have enormous fluctuations. And I think in that case I would say, okay, and then you find something which does not really look very similar, right, to the theory experiment. I would say that you have not a very hard point here to compare.
Maybe. Okay, we'll briefly mention now, just
But on this plot, your theory, the physical current depends on temperature.
This is this is because material parameter or material parameter like this depends on the temperature in the semiconductor. So they took account of everything.
So it's means that on this picture you are able to describe this shift or your parabola
temperature. That we don't understand. That may be because of the change of the material parameters, but we didn't compare in detail.
So it means that you shift your parabola in some artificial way, or you are
that one?
Or you can just consider the sum of your parameter of your theory are thermal dependent. You can using the same parameter sets all these temperatures plots for all these temperatures.
This picture is from the experiment paper, and I forgot how they put these lines, but maybe they just... Do you remember?
My understanding is they do some sort of least square fit to those straight lines for your theory, which gives them the A, that's the red curve in there. And what they're then saying is, okay, from the JC that you get out of there, you can calculate effectively K perpendicular, which is sort of what the right-hand side is saying. So the JC is really a value of K perpendicular. Now experimentally, you can measure the K perpendicular from some other experiments. So what they're saying, which is supporting Tatar and Kono, is that with this combined fitting, okay, you fit the TC, the A, the TC, the JC, and that tend of the JC curve agrees with the experimental measures of K perpendicular parabola. The temperature dependence in the K perpendicular experimentally is my understanding from talking to Bohan.
Is it okay? Or
But this is a little bit artificial, since we know that probably these thermal effects are very important there. So this is a little bit artificial proxy. Now try to put all this temperature dependence just to there some parameter. We don't propose some new values, but just consider that some bar parameter depends on temperature.
You think that spin wave theory and all that stuff, which depends simply on the existence of an order parameter, is good up to some fluctuation region very close the TC in the ferromagnet. So if you're outside that fluctuation region, I don't see why you should object too strongly to essentially what's a classical theory that just treats the order parameter as a dynamical variable. So if I do the same thing, I've got to defend that point of view.
So anyway,
can I just ask a question more about the theory than these particular experiments? Yeah. It seems to me the other magnets are sometimes rather complicated, especially in this temperature region. But so can you say something theoretically about the conditions under which, at least some sufficient conditions, under which you'd expect that impurity effects and spin orbit coupling would be negligible?
No. We have to anyway study, and that's role of the spin flip is still controversial from
without spin flip. So
okay. Impurity scattering. Impurity scattering does, as far as we saw, doesn't affect so much. It doesn't lead to a new some important terms if it's not so strong. The mean flip pass.
What does it mean, not so strong? What's the condition?
Okay. Compared to the wall thickness. The mean. Yeah.
Longer than the wall thickness?
Mm.
It would be short-range
impurity,
right?
As soon as impurity is magnetic, everything changes. Yeah. That's what we expect.
For a larger range of magnetic roughness,
At some point, the pinning on the wall.
Sure.
That's also important. As Can I go?
Okay,
I'll mention later. Yeah, the situation is more controversial.
Okay, so there's no new results.
Yeah, okay, there are many new results. There are many new results, but the interpretation is very difficult. The data is not so systematic as here. So, okay, so. Okay, as a theorist, of course, we studied a little bit about the thermal activation, and I'll briefly show what our treatment, our treatment results predicts. But before that, the experiment shows that this thermal dependence is quite complicated. The log of the velocity is something, T minus TC squared, but dependence on J is fractional, minus 1/2. And this we couldn't so far reproduce by simple picture of, the domain wall as a domain wall particle going over the barrier by some activation. If we use our rigid wall description, the thermal activation process is simply the wall particle going over the barrier, which is made by the transverse anisotropy. And this is modified by the current. The current tilts this potential, so the barrier's energy barrier depends on the current. And we can show that this simple picture results in a log of the velocity, which goes like spin current divided by temperature. It's not fractional, as we expect, because the barrier is modified by the current in the linear way, and the activation is by temperature. So this means that if we treat the wall as a rigid object, we cannot explain the experimental dependence in the thermal activation process. So we need perhaps the pinning, which extended pinning or randomness, and the wall creeps in the presence of such pinning, and that such randomness should be needed to explain this fractional dependence. Okay.
I'd like to make a comment at this point, since I wasn't correctly. I mean, the data that you're trying to fit to is not good. If you look at the plots that they fit up to, they actually go up to velocities, if I remember correctly, about 5 meters per second. So they're actually trying to put straight lines through data which is well outside the creep region. I mean, some older data that they gave us that went down to much smaller velocities doesn't fit their laws.
So what you say is the velocities?
If you look at the linear plots that they have, you'll find that they actually take linear plots that go up to about 5 meters per second, go down to maybe a hundredth of that. Whereas they actually gave us some data a year or so ago that went from much lower velocities, less than a meter per second, to very, very much lower velocities, and they show a scaling law which is quite different from the one they're publishing now.
So
I wouldn't trust that data very much. Oh. Their fit to the data. Well, maybe your theory is not sort of as bad as you think.
And in fact, there are many things which our theories, or all the theories, too simplified. But we are not sure if we can compare directly such theory with this. As you see here, this is an extended object going like a creep. So the theory have to modify many things. Okay, so we'll go. We'll mention briefly the matter. Yeah.
If you took your theory literally,
yeah,
and you assume a rigid wall, how big would the energy barrier be for your your fitted parameter? How big would the energy
for the thermal activation?
Yeah. What would the energy be?
We didn't estimate, but you want to know the number or velocity from the thermal.
Not the velocity, the magnitude of the energy. Mm. Washboard potential. How big is the energy difference between the minimum and the maximum?
That's from the transverse anisotropy, which is order of 0.1 Kelvin or something like that, times the number of the spins. And that's quite large. So the energy barrier is very high. But, we are interested in small modification of the barrier by applying a current.
Nevertheless, I mean, the basic scale and the rigid wall activation is the Arrhenius factor.
Yeah, and
if it's, if the barrier is many times KT, that's already, no matter what the prefactor is, it's a negligible process.
Right.
So then, theoretically, you can rule that out as
responsible.
Mm.
But still.
Yeah, but that's not fair, because he's tilting his potential enough so that you're almost at the point at which it falls over the.
Yeah, it depends on the
person. So, even though it might be pretty high before he tilts it, I mean.
If you're trying to get data.
I mean, I don't agree with him, but I don't think the point's good.
60%, 70% below threshold, where you identify the threshold, then that's not a big difference.
Well, the linear plot should go, something should go through the threshold current, so if you do a lot of linear plot, roughly speaking.
But anyway, what is clear is experimentally we have log V dependent thermal activation process, and also the slope seems to be not, I mean, slope, the linear term, I don't know, the slope, the temperature dependence seems not to be very different from the theory and experiment, I mean, order of magnitude. So even though the barrier is high, there is some small thermal activation process depending on the, which is dependent on the spin current, I think. Okay, so the situation in the metal is, the data in the metallic case, typical metallic cases carried out in Kyoto and Germany, there are not enough data to predict many things. I mean, there is a threshold below which the wall doesn't move, and the threshold is very high, and they have the more or less the same order of magnitude, which is 3 or 4 orders of magnitude higher than the semiconductors. And the velocity, the wall velocity is quite low, 1 meter or 4 meters per second. And this current density seems to be different from the intrinsic one by order of magnitude, 10 times or smaller than the intrinsic one. So we have to clarify the origin of the spinning, but anyway, the data is not so systematic so far. But this Kyoto group also carried out an interesting experiment. If the threshold is from the intrinsic one, it should depend on the sample geometry quite strongly, because this energy depends on the cross section of the wire. If they make a more or less wire-like structure, this K-pop becomes very small, and ideally it should go to zero if the cross section is circle. And if we make a sample very thin film, then this is large. So we expect strong dependence on the sample geometry of the threshold current. What they observe is this. If we make a very film-like sample, which looks like this, and then the threshold is rather high. And if, as we make, as he made with smaller, the threshold went down, but not as strongly as linear like this. And the data seem to be saturated at this. In this case, the K-pop is estimated to be very small, more or less zero, but still there is a threshold current. Yeah?
The numbers you're quoting, are they for the one-dimensional domain walls or for the vortex domain?
Ah, okay. This is, it makes, this is one-dimensional domain wall. And so, and the vortex and the one-dimensional wall, they have different JCs. So we cannot pass directly compare with our theory in this case, but maybe in this regime, our description is okay.
So to the right is vortex, and to the left is this one. So in the middle one, that one.
In between, maybe. Yes. Okay, so anyway, it's true, experimentally it's true that the sample geometry, or at least this K perpendicular affects JC, but the prediction, it's not very consistent with the intrinsic one. So, but, okay. Yeah, that's experimental result. And also, okay, I can skip. Maybe, I just try to skip many things and just there's. Okay. So anyway, that's an experimental situation. And the theory situation is also controversial. That's my last message. And okay, this is the equation motion on the wall. And the point. If this term describes reflection of the wall, and also, okay. If we neglect this term, we have intrinsic spinning, but as soon as this term appears, the situation is very different. And, okay, if we calculate the wall velocity as a function of current with this term included, the intrinsic spinning disappears, and the threshold is always determined by the extrinsic pinning, like this. So, anyway, even if this term is small, it totally changes the threshold and the wall behavior. And the issue is what determines or what is the value of this term. And there are many theories, different theories, which predicts. Sorry, I skip. This term can be one explanation for this term is the resistance of the wall or reflection. But recently, spin relaxation or spin flip scattering has been known to induce these new terms, as predicted by Tan Li and Thierville and also Professor Bauer's group, and also it. Did a calculation recently and found that spin relaxation really gives rise to these new terms. And also this term arises from the modification of damping by current, which will be as mentioned by Professor Barnes, and also Stiles and McDonald, they have different theory for, I think, these terms. And anyway, this term is very important in determining the threshold, but so far, different models has different results, and the situation is very controversial. And so, the experimental result in the metal is controversial, and also theory side is very controversial. And so, we have few more years to enjoy this field. Okay, so. I'll finish, stop this. Thank you very much.
You can even try to make it more controversial.
Mm-hmm.
You can try to make it more controversial.
By putting another term or...
I have a question. How do you explain that below 100k the main wall is practically immovable?
Immovable. In the,
you mentioned that they cannot move below 100k.
Yeah, that's because the threshold current is very high at low temperature. So it will exceed past the thermionic temperature.
Is there any way of putting it into the model?
In the model?
It's an experimental problem.
Yeah, yeah.
If the current density goes up at some point,
the heating,
comes to the norm, so that it just becomes experimental. It's impossible to do. So why does it go up and go?
When you get close to TC, things start to decrease because the magnetization is decreasing. So I think
that's the reason they cannot do.
Your TC is to get
that. Yeah, that's one.
Stuff like that. But
so all magnetic anisotropy is everything. The crystal form, they just have more effect because magnetization.
It's more. And the reflection.
And I've been thinking about this through this first time I thought about it, so I'm not, maybe there's an easy way to visualize this, but if the main wall is defined by the orientation of the moments themselves don't move.
Mm.
So, if an electron reflects up, scatters off of some domain wall, one thing you could expect is that the whole crystal is actually moving.
Visualize. From the theory side, we can define the linear momentum of the spin system by simply from the Lagrange defined by the Hadamard's law, and we have really the expression of the linear momentum of the spin chains or anything. But you want to visualize, right? So, if we look at the expression, maybe it helps us to understand, because the fourth term looks okay. The force arises from the derivative of the spin, which means it doesn't help. Or,
well, that's the thing that's scattering the electrons.
For an explanation, I mean, if you have a domain wall resistance, you have to drive a current through it, so you have to change the chemical potential for the two sides of the domain wall by some step. What you need in order to have a pressure on the wall is that the energy of the wall produces its coordinate changes. If you move the coordinate over, the amount of the wall, the amount of the wire that has the higher chemical potential either increases or decreases.
So the time applies for the force on the wall is the derivative of the total energy with respect to that wall coordinate. Okay, so that's what the electron has to do work on.
Did it explain?
What's the main difference between these two models when and why is it being so different? What is different from the point of view of the two models of binding? So this is probably an essential point of view to find some agreement in the different point of view. So is it like the one showing more general than the other, or or so they model some microscopic behavior in different ways? So from your point of view, what is the main difference between the stories?
Concerning the domain wall dynamics, there are two steps. I mean, there are controversialities on the domain wall dynamics, and both the theory, two theories between us and Dr. Bounds, and also there's controversial point in the origin of the beta or new such new torque term, and that's different. And you are interested in domain wall case, so I. Really? As far as I understand, Professor Bond theory predicts that the wall simply translates without tilt, right? And then threshold disappears. But also, what our message is that we have to take account this tilt, and then the intrinsic pinning appears.
So, the term is needed in your theory, you will remove this term, which describes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then everything the same.
You will get the same.
Yeah.
The main difference is that you have this term which describes as tilting
right.
out of
Okay, thank you very much.